Generally speaking, during any political election, candidates make all kinds of noble-sounding promises. We hear about the lower taxes, more spendable income, more affordable health care, a stronger defense, perhaps, even a renewal of character, a reminder that they seek to be people or men and women of honesty and truth and integrity. And all this sounds very good. Indeed, they all sound too good if we are honest. Every election we hear these same kinds of things. But the question before us is a rather simple and obvious one. How? How do you plan to do these things? What is the strategy for making these promises happen? What is the plan? Or as we say in the military, what is the scheme of maneuver? Undoubtedly, this is an important question, for without a plan, the most principled words are virtually meaningless. You can dream all you want, but if you don't have any direction for making dreams come true, you are just dreaming, in the words of the song of Andy Williams, you are dreaming the impossible dream. As you will know, we are going through a series of sermons on the life of Joseph, and here we are on chapter 41. And in the story of Joseph, according to this chapter of Genesis 41, Pharaoh is told by Joseph that 7 years of prosperity are going to be followed by 7 years of famine. Joseph tells Pharaoh that he needs to prepare for the coming famine during the years of abundance. Well, that's good advice, don't you think? In fact, it is to state the obvious. But how do you do this? Joseph has an answer, and his proposal is rather simple. Have everyone give 20% of their harvest to the government in the prosperous years, so a surplus can be ready for the lean years. It was this kind of specific plan that led Joseph being appointed as the second most powerful man in Egypt. And as we look at this account this morning, there are two things that I like us to learn from this story. First, notice that Joseph had a plan for the future. He had a plan for the future. But secondly, do note that God helped Joseph implement his plan by giving him, please note, peace with his past. Joseph had a plan for the future is our first point. He had a plan for preparing for the coming famine. Most likely, the plan was probably something that God revealed to him, although there is nowhere in this story that tells us that. But assuming, as we know, that Joseph was a spiritual man, that God reveals things to him, we can assume that that plan that Joseph proposed was a divine plan. And the wisdom of this plan is great. The government would appoint someone to collect 20% of the year's crop. They needed someone in charge because, as you know, human nature is such that in times of prosperity, we don't save money, don't we? We just spend more. We may resist planning because it doesn't sound very exciting. But the reality is that if we don't plan, I've been a student of theology for 7 years, and I vaguely remember with dread, even now, it's almost like chills, you know, comes down my spine when I remember the hours and hours I had to spend of revision. Well, if I not planned to revise, probably I would not have graduated. If we don't save our money, you will never be able to buy a home. If we don't put money away early, we won't be able to afford maybe even our retirement. And if we don't plan our route to a new location, the likelihood is that we might get lost. If we don't plan what we are going to say or write for a paper or even a sermon, yes, the preacher is likely to ramble on and waffle incoherently. If we don't set up a realistic budget, we will not have the money to pay our bills. I think the message is clear, don't you think? If we want to go ahead in life, we must plan. Of course, we understand this when it comes to money. We understand it when it comes to education. We understand it even when it comes to schooling. Yes, dare say, even when we talk about politics. But we often fail to plan for things far more important than these. And that is our spiritual life. How many of us do we really invest in that which we are going to spend far more time than ever will be in this life, eternity? Let's face it. It is very obvious, very evident, that we are going through a time of spiritual famine in our country. Well, how well have we planned for this coming time? We all know that there is coming a day, usually, probably, maybe sooner than we think, when we will be called to the judgment seat of God. How well have we planned for that day? Because the day is coming, you know. We know that there will be opportunities to share our faith with other people who do not know Christ. Well, how well have we planned for that time? We know that we will face endless temptations from the enemy one. Have we prepared for his assaults? If you remember, Jesus tells in the Gospel of Matthew chapter 25, he tells a parable about 10 bridesmaids that were waiting for the bridegroom to arrive. 5 of these women brought plenty of oil. They planned for a possible delay. The other 5, however, did not bring extra oil. And when the bridegroom delayed, they had to run to get oil. They missed out on the festivities because they were not prepared. And likewise, my friends, we must ask ourselves, how prepared are we for the coming of the bridegroom? But before we can plan adequately, we need to have a realistic view of the obstacles. Joseph knew that in 7 years famine would strike. He knew that what his deadline was. He knew the enemy. In a similar way, we need to identify the obstacles we face. And believe me, there are a number of them. For instance, the greatest enemy of the soul is ourselves, is our own nature. We are naturally lethargic when it comes to spiritual things. And therefore, we need to plan with our own resistance in mind. There is also the devil. Yes, he is a living person, spiritual person. He's real. And we know that Satan, who is the enemy of our souls, will use anything he can to turn us from any plan for spiritual growth. We know he will use discouragement as a tool in order to overwhelm us with the tasks ahead. And then there is our contemporary culture. Not only are we facing a time when Christianity, not necessarily religion in general, but Christianity in particular, is resisted by our society. We also face a media that constantly seeks to marginalize the Christian faith and the church and anyone who dares to stand for Christ. They are the very first ones that tells, be quiet, don't upset anybody. We need to understand the contemporary culture that we are living. That is our contemporary lifestyle. This is one of the things that I find most difficult to battle. We are so very busy, aren't we? We spend our lives running on the treadmill of life, and we begin to feel that any time spent in quiet reflection, a little bit of time with Christ, with God in prayer, or serious study, is a waste of time. I hear the golf swing. I need to go hither. So we need to be clear on what the barriers to success are. But second, we need to develop specific strategies. And one of the best ways to do this is to use what is called the SAM. And I don't mean the stated annual meeting. I'm talking about plans which are meant to be specific, attainable, and measurable. You see, Joseph didn't just say we need to store some grain. That's the obvious. Joseph had a specific plan, 20% each year for 7 years. It is attainable. It was a realistic plan. Joseph could have suggested maybe 30, 40, 50. But Joseph knew that 20% was an amount people would be able to afford and sacrifice. And it worked. It was measurable. It was a plan that could be evaluated since it was specific and it was for a certain period of time. You could evaluate how the plan was going. Goals must be like that. So what does this mean for our spiritual lives? It means that we have to give more thought to the idea of our spiritual growth. It is not enough, my friends, to say, I want to grow spiritually without putting the time and the effort. We need to develop into a plan that is all these things, specific, attainable, and measurable. Yes, many of us are good planners when it comes to our finances. We are good, maybe even looking after our own health. We do our exercises. We are educated, we read our papers, and we like to read books, and we want to enhance our knowledge, and that is great. We might even be planned to go to exotic holidays and plan accordingly, and that is perfectly fine. I am not knocking any of those things. But if the truth be told, very often we give little or no attention to really look at our own spiritual lives. But my friends, be warned. We will not stumble into heaven by mere wishing. Heaven is a prepared place for a prepared people. There is no secret door or special favors, no status or any amount of riches will allow us to get in on the cheap. No. It is only those who are obedient to God, faithful to him, and who have been forgiven by Christ. So, plans are important, and Joseph made plans. But you know, the other thing that Joseph made was peace with his past. I want us to see something else this morning. If something you may have missed, one thing that hinders many people in their growth is the baggage that many of us carry from the past. So notice that Joseph not only had a focus for the future, he had made peace with his past. And how do we know this? Go to verses 50 and 52 of that chapter of 41. Before the years of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph, to his wife Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, who was the priest of On. Now Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh, and he said, and I quote, "It is because God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household." And then the second son he named Ephraim, and he said, "It is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering." In other words, Manasseh is from the Hebrew word to forget, and Ephraim is from the Hebrew word meaning twice fruitful. So Joseph names his firstborn Manasseh because God, no other, but God has made me forget all my troubles. In other words, Joseph had made peace with his past. And every time he saw his son, every time he called his name, he was reminded that God had freed him from the distresses and the hurts of the past. Think about all that Joseph had to forget. Have you forgotten? The hatred of his brothers, the time stripped and thrown into prison by those same brothers, the memories of hearing his brothers planning and scheming, laughing at him, making fun of him, the years of serving as a slave, the false charges of Potiphar's wife, who blamed him for raping her, even though that never happened, the years shackled in prison, forgotten, abandoned. Yes, the scars were deep, but God's healing was deeper. I'm always reminded of the words of Corrie ten Boom, who once said, however deep the pit, the grace of God is deeper still. It's amazing, isn't it? Did Joseph literally not remember the events anymore? Of course not. But what did happen was that God got him past the hurt. He was no longer haunted by the betrayal and the rejection and the sense of failure. And these memories no longer haunted or control or possess him. God had helped him to move on. And I suggest, my friends, and I don't know anything about you. I know your faces, some of you, and I know some things, but clearly not the way God knows you. But I suggest today that many of you need to move as well. The hurts have been severe and deep in your life, but God can and will help you forget if you let him. You had to let him. Now, how do we get to this point? Well, let me make you some suggestions that I think were the key for Joseph. Joseph trusted the providence of God. In other words, he believed God was in control. He knew that God was involved in his daily life. And he believed that God loved him. And that God never, ever makes a mistake. And since this is true, then even the hurts of the past must be purposeful and allowed for a good end. So here is the question. Do you believe God? Do you trust that all things can work together for good to those who love him and are called according to his purpose? Are you willing to stop relieving the past hurts and start resting in the present grace of God? These are all personal and pertinent questions, and all of us must ask them. But Joseph also focused on the present instead of the past. Joseph made a decision based in faith that it was time to let go of the hurts so that he could focus on and enjoy the present. You know, my friends, there is one thing true about life, and I'm not telling you anything new, I know. But you know, you cannot change the past. You know that? I cannot change the past. I cannot change the memories. I cannot change and forget the things that really made my life be what it is today, any more than you cannot forget or change it. Yes, sometimes you need to confront the past, and sometimes you need to try to understand what happened. But you cannot and you mustn't live there. You need to move on. Remember the great words of Paul. This one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining forward to what is ahead, I press on towards the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenwards in Christ Jesus. Let me just sum up this account of Joseph. I sincerely hope that you will become intentional in planning for your spiritual life, as well as, of course, your physical and financial and your social growth and everything else that makes you who you are. They have to be specific, and they have to be attainable, and they have to be measurable. But my friends, do not neglect your spiritual life. Perhaps you are a diligent saver. Are you just as diligent about pursuing your salvation? Maybe you are diligent in taking care of your body. Are you as diligent in caring for your soul? Maybe you are diligent in investments. Well, are you diligent about investing in heaven? Maybe you are diligent regarding your budget. We love budgets. Even Benjamin loves a budget. Are we diligent about our time with the Lord? Don't you know, sometimes God must feel quite lonely without you talking to him, you know? I wonder how often do we spend time with him day by day, even 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes. You know that neighbors apparently, or neighbors is still on these days? I don't know. EastEnders maybe, or something like that? I don't know. You follow these things? You might. Half an hour, even a football match is 2 hours. Gentlemen, are you going to watch Spain this afternoon? Don't build your hopes up. They'll probably will get thrashed. But 2 hours of football, 10 minutes with the Lord is hardly anything, isn't it? Maybe you are diligent regarding anything, your home, your sport, whatever. And maybe you have perhaps no thought about it. Friends, the best way to start may be to settle the issue in our eternal destiny. I believe that God wants us to know the future as much as he wants us not to forget the past or not learn from it. Let us take action against the past that haunts us. Some people seek to bury their past by denying it. Others relive it in their minds again and again. Still others analyze it to death. What I am suggesting is that you confess your past, the hurts and the sin and the pain and the resentment, and then leave it in God's hands. He will bring justice and healing and vindication. As he did with Joseph, God can do for you and for me. May we come to him today and trust him with our lives. And may we be able to face the future without fear.